stain on the conscience, not just of our nation, but the world. It is why I voted against the offensive funding to Netanyahu almost 7 months ago. Now, look, I was encouraged that President Trump this morning finally said no to Netanyahu on bombing in Iran. But he needs to say no to Netanyahu in continuing the bombing in Gaza. He has authorized $14 billion of sales and transfers since he has been president. He can simply say to Netanyahu, stop. And then we can convene the Palestinians, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Israel to have a solution in Palestine that does not involve Hamas, that involves the civil voices in Palestine, and finally have a Palestinian state. But the question is whether Trump is going to stand up to Netanyahu's bombing in Gaza, stand up really to Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, who are pushing Netanyahu to continue this, and I really hope that he will, and the Congress can say we don't want to continue to fund it.
Thank you very much for joining us. Congressmember Ro Khanna, Democratic congressmember from Silicon Valley in California, introduced a bipartisan Iran War Powers Resolution. Happy birthday to Karen Ranucci. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Join me, Melissa Lesniak, creator and host of That Vegan Show, on Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m. as I interview Kayla and Ashlyn, founders of Little Critter Crew Small Animal Rescue. We are also joined by an active volunteer, Sarah. We will learn all about the mission of the Little Critter Crew and the animals they rescue, which are many. Bunnies, chinchillas, gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, hedgehogs, mice, rats, and sugar gliders, and sometimes kittens and geckos. So don't miss That Vegan Show, Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m., only on KBOO.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KBOO. Make a summer of memories with KBOO and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, abortions in the U.S. are up, despite bans. President Trump wants to rescind the roadless rule. And some in Congress question the legality of Trump's Iran strikes. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, June 24, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. The number of abortions in the United States rose in 2024, despite a number of new bans and restrictions in many states, according to a report from the We Count Project of the Society of Family Planning, a group which supports abortion access. Currently, 12 states have bans on abortion at all stages of pregnancy, with limited exceptions, and 4 states have bans starting at or about 6 weeks into pregnancy. That is often a time before women even realize they might be pregnant. While the total number of abortions has still risen gradually over these 3 years, the number has dropped to almost zero in some states. However, abortions using pills obtained through telehealth appointments has become a more common method in nearly all states. Pills, which can also be prescribed in person, are now used in the majority of abortions. The report tallied some 1.1 million abortions nationally last year at a rate of about 95,000 each month. That monthly rate is up from both 2023 and 2022. The overall figure is still well below the historic peak in the U.S. of nearly 1.6 million a year in the late 1990s. Pills prescribed by telehealth currently account for 1/4 of U.S. abortions. Before the Supreme Court Dobbs ruling, about 1 in 20 abortions were accessed by telehealth. In the middle of 2023, laws in some Democratic-controlled states took effect, protecting medical professionals who used telehealth to prescribe pills to patients in states where abortion is banned. About half of the telehealth abortions last year were facilitated by shield laws, but the number of telehealth abortions also grew in states without bans. Three states have sued to try to get courts to limit telehealth prescriptions of mifepristone, one of the two drugs usually used in combination for medication abortions. Donald Trump's administration recently said it does not believe the states have legal standing to make that case. Meanwhile, Louisiana lawmakers passed a bill targeting out-of-state doctors who prescribe pills intended to end pregnancies in residents of the state. State law already allowed women to sue doctors performing abortions there. That bill appears to be a response to a criminal case against a New York doctor who prescribed online abortion pills for a Louisiana minor. Idaho, Oklahoma, and Texas all have recently adopted restrictions against prescribing abortion pills across state lines. Cleanup around the Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River remains slow, and experts warn a do not eat advisory is still active for some fish caught around the dam, including sturgeon and bass. Migratory fish, like salmon and steelhead, are considered safe to eat, Isabel Charlet reports.
As outdoor recreation picks up for the summer, a clean water advocacy group reminds people that some fish around Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River are not safe to eat due to high levels of pollutants. The Do Not Eat advisory spans about a mile from the dam upriver to Ruckle Creek. The area was used by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for chemical storage and waste disposal for decades, starting in the 1930s. As a result, resident fish there contain some of the highest levels of the cancer-causing chemicals known as PCBs in the country. Kate Murphy with Columbia Riverkeeper says the Army Corps of Engineers hasn't prioritized the cleanup.
It's taken a lot of outside pressure from the Confederated Bands and Tribes of Yakima Nation and other tribes, as well as environmental groups like Columbia Riverkeeper, to get this site listed as a Superfund site.
Murphy explains migratory fish like salmon, steelhead, and shad are still safe to eat from the area because they're not feeding in the polluted water all year. The species that are not safe to eat include carp, bass, sturgeon, and several others. Murphy says the Oregon Health Authority website has more details. Part of the problem, says Murphy, is that there isn't enough data yet to know how to make a thorough cleanup. She says now that the area has been designated a Superfund site, the Environmental Protection Agency will oversee the Army Corps' efforts.
We are pushing for a thorough investigation of the nature and extent of the contamination to make sure that it's done right and that people then can feel confident fishing and recreating in this area.
Murphy says it is important that the agencies involved know people care about the issue. She adds there's a petition online at columbiariverkeeper.org they can sign to demand a swift and thorough cleanup of the site.
People really deserve clean water and healthy fish that they can safely feed to their families, and the toxic legacy at Bonneville Dam must be addressed.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Clinton administration long ago adopted the Roadless Rule, a landmark conservation rule preventing road construction and some timber production in some federal forests and wildlands. It has long bothered Republican lawmakers who say President Clinton usurped powers normally reserved for Congress. The rule affected 30% of national forest lands nationwide, or about 59 million acres. Now, Donald Trump wants to rescind it. According to Oregon Wild, an environmental advocacy group, around 2 million acres of Oregon National Forests could be affected, including areas around the Metolius and Sandy Rivers, Hardesty Mountain, and the Upper Hood River Valley. The announcement comes during recent talk of selling off federal lands to increase logging and reduce wildfire risk. Democrats have called it a public land grab. The roadless area change marks a stark turnaround from the Biden administration, which tried to do more to restrict logging and protect old-growth forests. Several hundred protesters recently gathered outside a meeting of the Western Governors Association in Santa Fe, chanting, "Not for sale." Environmental groups, who want to keep restrictions on logging and road building, criticized rolling back the protections. Josh Hicks, Conservation Campaigns Director for the Wilderness Society, said, quote, "Any attempt to revoke it is an attack on the air and water we breathe and drink, abundant recreational opportunities which millions of people enjoy each year, havens for wildlife and critical buffers for communities threatened by increasingly severe wildfire seasons," end quote. Despite claims about reducing wildfire risk, some say logging exacerbates climate change and makes wildfires more intense. Center for Western Priorities political director Rachel Hamby said, quote, "This is nothing more than a massive giveaway to timber companies at the expense of every American and the forests that belong to all of us," end quote. In Alaska, home of the country's largest national forest, the Tongass, the roadless rule has already been a focus of litigation, with state political leaders supporting an exemption to the rule. During the latter part of Trump's first term, the federal government lifted restrictions on logging and road building there, which the Biden administration later reversed. Trump earlier called for reverting to the policy as part of an Alaska-specific executive order aimed at boosting Alaskan oil and gas development, mining, and logging. State roadless area rules in Idaho and Colorado supersede the boundaries of the 2001 roadless rule, meaning not all national forest land would be affected by rescinding it. After a COVID-era dip in volunteering, data shows the numbers are rising across the country, and Oregonians volunteering more than the average American. To honor the state's top volunteers, AARP Oregon is now accepting nominations for its Andrus Award for Community Service. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
AARP Oregon has opened up nominations for its prestigious award for volunteerism. For the Andrus Award for Community Service, the organization will select a person or couple age 50 or older performing services without pay in their communities. Geneva Craig won the award in 2019 for her work organizing educational sessions for her community around Medford in Southern Oregon. She says as a child, her mother taught her to volunteer by supporting their sick neighbors.
So there's no age group where you can say, oh, I don't have a skill, I don't have a talent. You have something to offer, if only to give some support and let somebody know you care.
Oregonians do a lot of volunteering. Data from 2023 shows that nearly 36% of Oregonians formally volunteered through organizations, about 8 points higher than the national average. Research shows volunteering helps counteract the effects of stress, anxiety, and depression while making people feel more connected and happier. Craig says it is important that volunteers inspire others.
I'm happy because I'm seeing the rise in people who are stepping back out and offering to volunteer. And I try to let them know, we're not going to work you to death. Okay? This is teamwork.
The deadline for the Andrus Award nominations is September 1st. The winner receives $1,000 to donate to a nonprofit of their choosing. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Some in Congress question the legality of Trump's Iran strikes as he announces a ceasefire. Gen Zers filter their college choices by politics, and Islamophobic rhetoric surfaces in New York City's tight mayoral race. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I asked for a Gang of Eight briefing. It has yet to occur. And it's not clear to me what the administration is hiding from the Congress and from the American people.
House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York is criticizing the White House for failing to brief lawmakers after airstrikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. Iran replied by striking a U.S. airbase in Qatar Monday with no reported injuries. That retaliation seemed designed to allow for de-escalation. President Donald Trump posted on social media that Iran gave an early notice of the missile strike. He then announced a ceasefire in the air war between Iran and Israel. That may reduce momentum for a war powers resolution, Congress asserting its sole constitutional right to declare war. Speaker Mike Johnson is calling that unnecessary. Some of the president's isolationist America First base may still be alienated by his decision to join a Mideast war. But that reaction could also be muted by an end to fighting. Security officials are so far still voicing concern about potential domestic threats, including cyber attacks and possible acts of terrorism. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem.
My responsibility is to secure the homeland, to do all I can to make sure that we're identifying threats that may be here, what we can do to get in front of them before anything could happen to the population that live here in the United States.
The administration has long argued without evidence that illegal immigration puts the U.S. at risk for terrorism. In a Monday hearing on the Justice Department's budget, Attorney General Pam Bondi was asked about border security and potential threats from Iranian nationals.
I don't have the number of the conviction, but it's well over 1,000 have entered our country. And I can tell you we are on high alert and everyone is looking at that very closely.
A new Supreme Court decision will temporarily allow the Trump administration to deport migrants from Cuba, Vietnam, and Laos to South Sudan, an African nation in deep crisis. The court's liberals argued against sending migrants to countries other than their homes. Polls in the New York mayoral race show a close contest between Socialist Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani and former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Some of Mamdani's online critics in the tense contest are using anti-Muslim rhetoric. New college application data show political leanings are influencing students' decisions about where to attend. Nearly 30% of Gen Z students say they factored in a school's politics, according to Pam Royale of EAB, which conducted the study.
They're eliminating certain institutions that they believe are misaligned with their political values, either because they're too conservative or they're too liberal, they're in a blue state or a red state.
Royale says students told them it's less about choosing like-minded institutions and more about avoiding those that feel out of sync. She adds students are watching how colleges handle protests. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member online anytime during this program by going to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 56 degrees, and tomorrow it will be much cooler with clouds and a high of 71. Today in history, O Canada is performed for the first time at the Congrès National des Canadiens Français in 1880. The song would later become the Canadian national anthem. The quote of the day is from actor Eli Wallach, who passed on this day in 2014. He said, quote, "Having the critics praise you is like having the hangman say you've got a pretty neck." While firefighter numbers are dwindling across the country, in Idaho, Nez Perce tribe members are answering the call. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As the Trump administration looks to combine multiple fire agencies under one organization, firefighter numbers are dwindling. Northwest Public Broadcasting's Lauren Patterson reports on how the Nez Perce tribe is stepping up despite the challenges.
Three young firefighters are standing under the hot sun in Lapway, Idaho, doing an engine check on one of their fire trucks. All of them are tribal members and firefighters for the Nez Perce tribe. Riston Bullock is going into his 13th season. He says he does this job because he's dedicated to protecting the land and his community.
Now that I've been in fire for so long, it's kind of more being the first one to respond, put the fires out.
A big challenge here in Idaho and across the nation is that there aren't enough people to help.
We're losing firefighters. The numbers are going down.
People can still volunteer, but
we need people at the shop ready to go when those fires start.
Across from the shop in the air-conditioned office, Jeff Handel, the fire management officer, is on the phone trying to schedule repairs for fire trucks.
What I need is I've got a couple rigs that need radios put in.
He's also worried the younger generation doesn't seem too interested in firefighting.
It's pretty tough in today's world when you can get a job from work from home and do okay financially. Why would you want to go out and do the firefighting thing, which is very hard work?
Back at the shop, the firefighters are organizing equipment like ropes and hatchets. There could be changes coming to how the Nez Perce tribal fire crew works with other agencies in the region. The Trump administration is trying to merge all federal firefighting into a single agency. that could mean shifting thousands of jobs around just as fire season is ramping up. Bullock says he's not sure how that would work.
I feel like it'll just kind of be a new name, but I still feel like we'll still have our shops and everything here will be mixed out through each other. And
approximately $1.2 billion will be requested as part of the new Wildland Fire Service budget. For now, Bullock and the rest of the crew aren't giving it too much thought. They're busy getting ready for the next call. Reporting in Lapway, Idaho, I'm Lauren Patterson.
The U.S. Senate is still drafting its version of President Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Tucked away in that proposed budget is a measure to renew compensation for those who had been exposed to radiation from uranium mining and nuclear weapons testing. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
If finalized, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act would now sunset in 2028. It also expands eligibility for claims from the Trinity test site in New Mexico, where the first atomic bomb was detonated, and to more uranium miners. The Navajo Nation has been lobbying to reinstate RECA since it expired last June.
I'm in just so much pain all the time.
Maggie Billyman is Navajo. She has COPD and was recently diagnosed with liver and kidney disease. While downwinders like herself are hopeful about RECA returning, they're also concerned that lawmakers are considering huge cuts to health services.
This big, beautiful bill is just something else. You get help from the RECA compensation, right? And then take Medicaid and Medicare. It just doesn't make any sense.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Janie Hipp was recently named Chickasaw Nation Dynamic Woman of the Year by Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby. Hipp has dedicated her nearly four-decade career to food sovereignty through agricultural law, including her work at the USDA and the Native American Agriculture Fund. The award honors Chickasaw women who have made significant contributions to the Oklahoma tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Mass deportations combined with legislation could lead to more migrant workers coming to Washington under the H-2A visa program. But advocates for immigrants' rights say the program doesn't have enough oversight, leading to mistreatment of workers, Isabel Charlet reports.
Advocates for immigrants' rights in Washington are voicing concerns about the possible expansion of the H-2A visa program, which they say exploits migrant workers. Washington is one of five states most dependent on H-2A workers in the country, whose numbers have ballooned in the last decade to about 33,000. Edgar Franks is with the independent farm worker union Familias Unidas por la Justicia, based in Skagit County. He says farm labor shortages caused by mass deportations could increase reliance on the program, and H-2A workers often face wage theft and poor housing.
Being crammed into a small room, or if you're in a place where it's really hot, there's no ventilation or air conditioning. The bathrooms are lacking in sanitation. Sometimes they give mattresses with bed bugs in them.
From 2018 to 2023, the Department of Labor found nearly 70,000 violations against employers of H-2A workers. The most common was wage theft. Representative Dan Newhouse of Washington's 4th District wants to expand the program through the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which he says would ease burdens on farmers. Frank says one of the problems with the program is that workers' visas are connected to a specific employer, giving that employer too much control. If a worker is laid off or fired, their visa becomes invalid and they must leave the country immediately.
It's really hard for workers to really speak up and talk about their wages or make formal complaints because of fear of retaliation.
U.S. companies should raise their wages in Mexico, adds Franks, which would reduce the need for people to go north. He also calls for workers who have already been working in the state, sometimes for decades, to be legalized.
If you have workers that are protected and paid well and treated well, that's in the interest of the whole nation. So we should recognize that and really step up for farm workers.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Creative Beats, Healing Minds, a therapeutic drumming program at OSU Lima, helps Parkinson's patients find rhythm, movement, and joy in a supportive setting. Farah Siddiqui reports.
A drumming program at Ohio State University Lima is helping people dealing with Parkinson's disease improve coordination, memory, and overall wellness. Music faculty say it's offering both students and patients a new rhythm for healing. The Drumming for Wellness program connects Ohio State Lima music students with local Parkinson's patients referred by Mercy Health St. Rita's Hospital. Austin Thomas, music faculty, says each week participants take part in live drumming sessions designed to support motor function, speech, and multitasking.
We're not necessarily curing any of those diseases, but we're hoping to kind of delay their symptoms for the hour that we get to see them each week or for the 6 or 7 weeks that the entire program goes on.
Parkinson's disease affects nearly 1 million Americans with no known cure. Studies show music and rhythm therapy can ease symptoms such as tremors, speech loss, and gait instability. Thomas says each session involves multiple exercises designed to challenge the brain and body simultaneously. Participants drum while reciting word sequences, tap feet to rhythm, or mimic complex patterns to help regain focus and movement.
Maybe half of the participants need to work on multitasking, a couple need to work on arm mobility, a couple need to work on their walking gait. And so we try to address any obstacles that are in the room every single week.
Thomas says the experience has been rewarding for everyone involved, and he hopes more Ohio communities can use creative therapies to support neurodegenerative disease patients. For Ohio News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Indiana's new law banning transgender women and girls from women's college sports takes effect July 1st, expanding an earlier K-12 restriction and drawing criticism from LGBTQ advocates. Joe Ullery reports.
A new Indiana law takes effect July 1st, banning transgender women and girls from playing on women's college sports teams, expanding the state's earlier K-12 restrictions passed in 2022. House-enrolled Act 1041 applies to all public colleges and universities and any private school competing against a public institution. Supporters say the measure protects fairness in women's sports by requiring athletes to compete based on their sex assigned at birth. But Zoe O'Halen Byrne with Indiana Youth Group says the law harms students already at high risk.
Laws like HB 1041 do more than restrict sports participation. They send a loud and resounding message that transgender youth do not belong in Indiana.
Opponents of the new law say it isn't backed by facts. O'Halen Byrne says it distracts from the real challenges transgender students face on campus. O'Halen Byrne disputes widely disseminated claims of unfairness when trans athletes compete in women's sports.
1041 is built on the false claim that transgender girls are dominating women's sports. In reality, most transgender youth avoid sports altogether. They do this because of the scrutiny and bullying that they face on a day-to-day basis.
O'Halen Byrne says Indiana leaders should focus on making schools and campuses safer for all students, not more hostile. I'm Joe Ullery, Indiana News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
An electric car share program helps people get around the Twin Cities. The program is designed for people who only need a car occasionally. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. People in cities can often walk, bike, or take public transit, but sometimes they need a car. For example, to pick up a large purchase or to get to an appointment across town. When that happens, residents of Minneapolis and St. Paul can turn to EVE, an electric car share program.
We're not replacing transit. We're not replacing bike or pedestrian transportation. We're trying to solve the problem of when folks need to do something that does in fact require a car, how can we meet those needs without folks feeling like they need to purchase a vehicle?
Aaron Kaiser of the City of St. Paul says the program is a partnership between the two cities, the local utility, and Our Car, a nonprofit car share service. The cars are available for one-way trips, so users can find and book a car with the EV app, drive it, and then drop it off almost anywhere in the program's 35-square-mile service area. EV cars can be charged at no additional cost at city-owned chargers that use renewable energy.
Folks who are used to transit, pedestrian, bike transportation, this is just one more way that they can continue to live a car-free or a car-light life.
Which is good for the climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem. The producer is Nate Kapp, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Joe Ullery, Farah Siddiqui, Jamie Solder, Franny Halperin, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for This Way Out.
Hi, I'm B.B. King. You know the guy that plays that guitar called Lucille. And when I'm in Portland, I get my blues from KBOO. That's 90.7 FM on your radio. Please stay tuned. They might play one of my records.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m.